V'yikach Korach ben Yitzar ben Kahat ben Levi v'datan v'aviran b'nei Eliav v'on ben Pelet b'nei Reuven. So the first thing that I want to point out is that Korach is somebody who we know at this point. Korach is somebody who's been mentioned along the way. He's been mentioned along the way being the son of Yitzar, being from the family of Kahat. The family of Kahat is a very prestigious family. We will see more about them in a moment. As a matter of fact, if you want that moment to come very quickly, you can look at source number two. The Elish, this is in back in Shmot Perek Vav. The Elish Shmot b'nei Levi told Otam Gershom uKahat uMerari, that the children of Levi, we have three families, Kahat Merari, Gershom, Kahat Merari, Shnechei Levi, so on and so forth. B'nei Gershom l'b'nei Shemi l'mishpachotam uBnei Kahat. Here are the children of Kahat. Amram, v'Yitzar, v'Chevron, v'Uziel. So one of the children of Kahat is named Amram. This is somebody who we have come across at some junctures. And another one, his name is Yitzar. So now we realize that the older one, the older son of Kahat is Amram, and the younger one is Yitzar. And we also realize something else towards the end of Parshat Naso, though not exclusively there. We were told special things about the entire family of Kahat. They're the ones who have a special job in terms of carrying the Mishkan, carrying the Aron, carrying things which are holy, which means that these are the ones who are entrusted to do a very important task. Although, if one would be somewhat cynical, which apparently one can be, then they would say, yeah, it's very nice that he's giving this secondary job, but it's not the primary job, which means the primary job is the one or the ones which end up going to the children of Amram, and the children of Amram obviously include Aharon and Moshe. So here we see that Amram is the firstborn. His children, Aharon and Moshe, get primary jobs. The son of Yitzar, Korach, also gets a primary job, but just not as primary as the primary job. And sometimes you can have a primary job, but if it's not as primary, then it seems not. I mean, that's something which is both positive and negative. The Gemara says that kinat sofrim arve chachma. That sometimes you look and you say, I can't believe he did this. If he could do this, I could certainly do this. And that can then get people to do more positive things. So when rabbis are jealous of one another, we get more books. Which, by the way, that's not necessarily a good thing. But that's kinat sofrim arve chachma. So the problem, and as I said, in that case, perhaps something which is positive, but the problem is that we tend to see ourselves within contrast to other people. And therefore, it's not that I have a good job, but he's got a better job. It's not that I'm making X amount of money, which is all that I need, but he's got something which is more. And therefore, we seem to constantly evaluate ourselves based upon comparison to others. So therefore, had Korach never done that, we would not have a problem. Now, the first verse is one which is problematic, because we have a dangling something. V'yikach Korach ben Yitzar ben Kahat ben Levi. So what did he take? V'yikach, he took something. Datan v'avi, right? V'yikach Korach ben Yitzar ben Kahat ben Levi. V'datan v'aviran ben Eliav v'on ben Pelet b'nei Reuven. So you got to the end of the pasuk, and what he took is not exactly clear. If you look at source number four will give us a well-known interpretation, but perhaps he didn't realize how much it's attempted to be read right into the text. This is the way the Targum Yonatan reads it. V'yikach talito shakulut chelet Korach ben Yitzar ben Kahat ben Levi. So what did he take? So then he took this talit shel full of blue, full of chelet. Now, why in the world is there this emphasis on this talit, which is full of chelet? Let's hold off on that for a second, then we will come back to that. When we go back to the first source, and we had this first verse, which is impossible, two of the people we met are Datan v'Aviran. Now, Datan v'Aviran, we've seen them all over the place. You know, every single, they're the Bible's Cheech and Chong. Every single time that there is trouble to be, these are the ones that are causing all the trouble. Although I will point out, they've never been mentioned before. Right. This is the first time they're mentioned. Every other time they're mentioned, it's your imagination and your poor education that you've received to this point, which is subject to an incredible lawsuit that, you know, we're working on right now, class action. And that is your complete, or our complete, I won't pick on you so much, inability to separate between the Chumash and Rashi. And there were so many times along the way that Rashi had Datan v'Aviran in our text over here. We're sure that, weren't they written there black and white? They're the guys who went out with the mun in the morning and so on. and weren't they the guys that were fighting along the way, and weren't they the guys that were fighting again along the way? Meaning they're the ones who picked on Moshe and whatever. They've never been mentioned till now, which therefore means that every single time that they've been mentioned previously was, again, our theory of conservation of characters. And here we have something major going on, and therefore we write it back into every other case. Although there are some linguistic reasons, which maybe we'll get to and we'll point out, why we would make the association some of the others. And by the way, not all of the linguistic information which is here will you necessarily be satisfied with, so I'm already saying that. But some of it you'll see will lead in a particular direction, so perhaps we'll get there. I drew up my cultural reference from the wrong generation, so... So I apologize. Over here, Datan Bavirin are characters who we don't know, and Owen Ben Pelet is somebody, this is the only time that he's mentioned, right? He's here initially, and he's never mentioned before, he's never mentioned again. This is, anybody know the fancy phrase for something which is only written one time? Yes, I called him that this week. Anybody feeling very inadequate right now? Excellent. Because kinat sofrim marber chachma. So now you guys got to go and... You got him. They're still not getting it.
H-A-P-A-X?
No, say it loud.
H-A-P-A-X?
That is a phrase which is used for a word which is used only one time in Tanakh. Okay, or in a literature. It's not only Tanakh. Okay. V'yakumu lefnei Moshe... ויקומו לפני משה, באנשים מבני ישראל 50 ומאתיים, נשיאי עדה, קריאי מועד אנשי שם. So part of our difficulty here, first of all, we have this Vayikach, which is our dangling Vayikach. What did he take? He stands in front of Moshe, ואנשים מבני ישראל, and 250 people. So it could be that he takes 250 people, נשיאי עדה. So what is the word, or... The phrase Nisei Eda, the leaders of the community. So who are the leaders of the community? Are the leaders of the community the 250 men, or the leaders of the community Korach as well? Leaders of the community also Datan Vavira, and then also called Kriyei Moed. What does Kriyei Moed mean? Does that mean that they were called or they were invited to the Ohel Moed, or people who frequent the Ohel Moed, Kriyei Moed, Anshe Shem, men of renown? So what we have over here, Nisei Eda, Kriyei Moed, Anshe Shem, and I'm going to again go back to something which we observed last week, when Moshe goes and complains, you know, this is so hard, I can't do this by myself, and please, God, have compassion and kill me already. So the solution was, well, I'll send you people to work with. I'll send, you know, those who are going to aid you and those who are going to help you. So here we have, again, another episode of those who theoretically could be those to support, including his cousin, first cousin Korach, including other people of renown, leaders, people come to the Ohel Moed, but instead of helping, we find the opposite. Pasuk Gimel, v'yikalu al Moshe v'al Haron. You like that? It's not El, it's al Moshe, v'al Haron. There seems to be a violence implied within that. V'yomur lehim, and here's the start of the... And by the way, notice v'yomur. This is not just Korach speaking. In our minds, we always imagine it's only Korach who's speaking, but it's not. V'yomur lehim. There already is a movement which has festered about, where there's already not just an agenda, but there is a slogan which is used by Yomur Elayim, and they say to them, Rav Lachem. Now, what does that mean, Rav Lachem? Rav Lachem is, it's even more, it's excessive. You've done too much. Rav Lachem, ki chol ha'eda kulam kedoshim uvutocham Hashem. The entire community is holy, and everyone has God within. And now, finally, umadua, and therefore why, titnasu al kahal Hashem. Why do you raise yourself above the others? Now, what exactly do they want? What exactly is the claim? What exactly is the end game over here? Is not a simple thing. On top of that, knowing the identity of all of these people would certainly help, because so far what we have is a very interesting combination between two factors that we would not have necessarily have expected them to join together. One is somebody from a prominent Levite family, Korach, joining together with three people, Datan, Avirim, and Owen, all of them from the Reuven family. 250 people are not, we are not told where they're from, which therefore, of course, will leave various Midrashim and the various Rishonim to go about and put forth different theories as to who those people may be, but the claim is, again, you've taken too much. Why do you place yourself on top of the people? Everybody is holy. And right away, what we realize with this is that there's something very popularist about this. You seem to think that you're better than everybody else. You're not better than everybody else. Everybody is holiness. And again, I think one can go through history and find all kinds of movements, especially within Judaism, who've made claims like this and have said things like this. Well, that's a pretty good point. So is this really a rebellion? That's part of the question that we always seem to be asking ourselves. Right. That seems to be a question we always seem to ask ourselves. So who are they arguing with? Are they picking on Moshe? Are they picking on Aaron? Are they picking on God? And obviously there's going to be just some level of combination of this. Part of what we're going to do today is that we're going to interpret the text as per other verses in Tanakh, which means to see other places that come back and to speak about this and to see how they perceived this to be. So therefore, yeah, they're putting forth an argument over here, but what is actually underlying this, and how, again, what is the understanding of people who hear this? What do they see? Vayishma Moshe v'yipol al panav. Moshe hears this and he either v'yipol al panav, he collapses, or v'yipol al panav in prayer. Either way, Moshe takes this very seriously. And again, I would assume that part of it is not just what's said, and what is said is very bad, but it's also the fact that it's coming from a particular place. It's coming from his first cousin. Again, these people theoretically should have been close, and that's part of the problem as well. So therefore, Moshe's response is, Vaydeber el Korach ve'el kol avato. So Moshe identifies Korach as the leader, and he says to Korach and his entire clan, and he says something which is extremely harsh. And the only question over here is how harsh it is and what Moshe is trying to say, what he's trying to communicate. And then the follow-up question will be, and how Korach understands it. V'deber al Korach v'el kol adato lemor boker, right? The day will dawn. Actually, sounds very biblical. Boker, for good reason. V'yoda Hashem et asher lo, v'eta kodesh v'kriv elav. Which means Moshe right away turns this into, okay, let's see. But right away, he's not even discussing this. You know, in the morning, God will already give his opinion as to this, because this is not the kind of thing that the discussion is already going to be a bad discussion. Once you start defending yourself against such a thing, you know, who put you in charge? Like, you just like look at him. And we all do appreciate the irony. The irony is that Moshe never wanted to be in charge. When he was asked to be in charge, he declined to be in charge. He didn't want to do this. And God had to talk him into this, and this is what he gets for this. So as I said, that's also a part of this. But the continuation of Moshe says is extremely harsh. We understand him, but let's listen to the words anyway. He again speaks to Korach. Take, everybody should take pans. Utnu bahem esh, and place fire within them. V'simu lehem ktoret, and put on top of them some incense. Lufnei Hashem, in front of God. Now, those of you who've missed like the first part of the Chumash till this point may not necessarily get the reference. Those of you who have been here before, and certainly if you recall Parshat Shmini, though not exclusively Parshat Shmini, that every time it comes back and speaks about the deaths of Nadav Avihu, it speaks about a death always lefnei Hashem, a death which is in front of God, a death which is caused about because they took a pan, and they put fire in it, and they put incense in it, and they offered it in front of God, and what was the downside to it? God accepted it. God took it. But not only did God take their incense, God took them as well. And for Moshe to turn right now and say, well, how exactly does the risk work out when somebody thinks that he's supposed to be bringing some kind of offering that doesn't? You really want to go up this road? And by the way, this, if I'm not mistaken reading it, this is the most cynical that we've ever seen Moshe get. And sure, let's do the old pan incense trick, and let's see how this works out. And by the way, do you have fire insurance? Just checking out. And you would fully expect at this point for anybody within that group to say, no. Slow down a second. The other thing that I want to stress about this is that Korach and Datan and Aviram never agree to this. They do not do this, which means Korach and Datan Baviran, they will not engage Moshe. They will not do what Moshe has asked them to do, because they apparently know what's going to happen. The only people who end up doing this are the 250 people. Now, again, I just want to stress here what Moshe puts out. Moshe says, go back. Who does Moshe address? In Pasuk Vav, Zotasu, right? Who is he talking to? Already back in Pasuk Hey. Vaydeber el Korach ve'el kol adato, to all of them. Pasuk Vav, Zotasu kulachem, right? All of you should be doing this. Pasuk Ched, Vayom Moshe el Korach, Shemuna b'nei Levi. And again, he's talking to Korach and says, let's go for this. Let's see how this works out. Right? Again, Pasuk Vav one more time. Zotasu kulachem achtot Korach v'chol adato. Korach, you want to do this? Korach, your first cousin, your other one, Aaron, he had two sons died trying to do this. You want to do this? And then, as I said, Korach never does this. Korach is not willing to do this, as we'll see when we pay a little bit more attention as we proceed. Pasuk Ched, Vayomer Moshe el Korach Shimon b'nei Levi, Hama'at mikem ki yavdil l'keis v'latchem, which means God did give you in a very important role. Me'adat Yisrael l'hakriv etchem elav, l'avod et avodat mishkan Hashem, l'amod l'fnei eidah l'sharetam, which means, Korach, what exactly are you advocating now? Are you saying that everything is wrong, and therefore the role that you have right now, you want to forfeit as well? You're saying that, or you want to hold on to that? I mean, exactly, what are you arguing over here? And again, I'm going to say that Moshe does not engage in conversation. Moshe, you know, sets out, he throws the gauntlet, and he challenges him, and he pushes him, and Moshe's, he seems like he's just not in the mood, because there's nothing that you say to a person like this. Now, I want to go back to Chazal for a moment. We saw the way that the Targum Yonatan took the Midrash, and the way, again, what was the Midrash that it took? That he was dressed up in clothing of Kula Tchelet. Now, the reason that the Midrash does this is twofold. One is, what was the basic argument? We are completely holy. Kulam Kedoshim. Which means that Midrash is an attempt to take this abstract idea and to put it into some kind of a visual. We are completely holy. So how do you show complete holiness? So therefore, and here's the second reason, what was the previous section of Chumash immediately prior to this? It was a section about tzitzit. So what did it say about tzitzit? So it says that you put one blue string, or arguably one blue string, but there's a percentage of blue versus white. So he says, okay, now what happens if the entire garment is blue? If everything is holy, should one stand out? Should one be special? Should one be different? And when Moshe gives the answer yes, then they all start laughing, and that's the Midrash. The second example that the Midrash gives is also interesting, and again, just in terms of association, how it got there, because it says, what happens if you have a house which is full of Sifrei Torah? Do you still need to put one little mezuzah, which of course would be a very small percentage of a Sefer Torah? Do you still need to put this on the doorpost? And Moshe answers yes, and they all again start laughing again. So hold it, where did we get to that? So apparently the mitzvah mezuzah was not given yet, right? It's in the first and the second parasha of Shema, which are both introduced in Sefer Dvarim, right? So in Vayetchanan and later on in Akev. So we're not up to that yet. So apparently in the mindset, whoever said this, still the whole Shema is there. So you started with the third parasha of Shema, then they went backwards to the second or the first parasha of Shema, and are introducing Mizuzot as well. But again, I'm going to say it. It is an attempt to create a visual of an abstract idea that we are all completely holy. All of us are holy. Now again, that's a very populist idea. Everybody's holy. But if everybody's holy, then first of all, at least the definition that we have used a number of times based upon the Rashi, based upon the Midrash and Parsha Kadoshim. Kadoshim to you. What is Kadosh mean? What is something which is holy? Holy means something which is different, something which is separate. So if everything is holy, that means that by definition, then actually nothing is holy. So that, I'm saying that's where the demagoguery fits into this. When I say everything is holy, so nothing becomes holy. And again, let's be honest, that holiness is something which we really have lost to a very great extent in modern society. In America, just thinking about this the other day, in America, there's only really 2 days, and you're going to laugh at me, that may still have holiness to them. And one is Christmas, and then the other is July 4th. Now you can say, so why am I saying that? And for a very simple reason, that every other holiday has all been moved over to Sundays, Mondays, all the weekends. It's all just to make long weekends. Everything is about making a long weekend, which of course goes back to the Baitusim, Vaitusi argument, which we saw in the Gemara Minachot, that the whole idea of Machar Shabbat is to always have a holiday on a Sunday to make a long weekend. So once something's on a weekend, it's not that day is holy, it's that, you know, we need a long weekend right now. So the only days that can come at any point in the calendar are still July 4th and Christmas, so therefore you can say, oh, there's something about those days which are different. Everything else is just a long weekend. But it still comes back to the same point, that if everything is holy, then there's no such thing as holiness anymore. That's exactly the problem over here, and that's why I'm saying there's a degree of demagoguery over here, and what is ultimately the end game? That's something which to me is interesting. Moshe then turns around. On the one hand, he addresses Korach, and he says to Korach, you know, you already have something which is special. Again, I'm understanding this as not an attempt at a bribe, not an attempt saying, so did God give you this? So you're forfeiting what you have? And Moshe does not clearly articulate what seems to be in the back of his mind. All of these appointments come from God. Continue, Pasuk Yud. Do you want this in addition? Which means you can't have it both ways. You can't say that God chose you as Levi and your whole family is Levi, and also now you want to be a Kohen. Either God gave these positions or he didn't give these positions. Which one is it? But again, the God element over here is minimal, right? It is not said as clearly as we would like. Pasuk Yud Aleph. L'chein atav acholadcha hanodim al Hashem. So very clearly now Moshe says, all of you who are picking on God, meaning it's God who is doing this, v'aron malchu kitalinu olav. What does it do with Aaron that you're picking on him? Your problem was with God and not with Aaron. V'yishlach Moshe l'kol adatim v'avir. And so now this again is interesting because what we have over here is a little bit of divide and conquer. That Moshe, on the one hand, addresses Korach, and on the other hand, he addresses Datan and Aviram. And that's part of the question. What exactly is the link between these two different factions? He turns to Datan and Aviram, B'nai Eliav, V'yomur lo na'aleh. And they're the ones who are much more contentious, and the next statement is one of the great statements of Chumash, Hama'at ki alitanu me'eretz zvat chalav udvash, lamitanu me'bar, meaning you took us out of a land with flows of milk and honey to kill us in the desert. So we hear a number of things over here. I mean, this really is all of the bad things that happened till now. We hear that coming across. Ki tistarer alenu gam histarer, and so on and so forth. Lo na'ale. We refuse to stand up. I just want to skip a little bit. Pasukav Zayin. Vayalu me al mishkan korach datan v'yiram misaviv v'datan v'yiram yatsu nitzavim petach oleim u'nishem v'neim v'tapam. They stand nitzavim. What does nitzavim mean? So it's strong, it's arrogant. What? Firmly. So this may be the point. And again, this is what I was going to say before. You're going to give me a hard time, but don't. Rav Hirsch likes it, and some of the others like this as well. Back in Shemot, which you do not have in front of you right now, unless you have it in front of you. Back in Shemot, where we have Moshe going out, and a Jew's being beaten, and Moshe gets involved, and he kills the Egyptian. Next day, this is one of the times that we're told it was none other than Datan Vavira. But what does it say then? Shmine shnei anashim ivrim nitzim. Not nitzavim, nitzim. So I'm going to say it again, that there are those who see a linguistic connection between the words nitzim and nitzavim. As I said, you can argue, but again, it's because it's datan ba'aviran, they're standing nitzavim. But again, their standing nitzavim is this arrogance as well. They're standing firmly. They're not going to give in to Moshe. Moshe is the enemy as far as they're concerned. And then you read the continuation of the verse back in Shemot. Vayomer, right, and Moshe says, L'rasha lama takereyecha. Vayomer, misamcha le'ish sar v'shofet aleinu. Who put you in charge? That's why Chazal say that this is datan ba'aviran. It's again, it's this theory of conservation of characters where Dat and Vaviran over here turn to Moshe, you know, who made you in charge over here? Halar Hargeni Ata? Are you going to kill us? Asher Kasher Harakta at the Mitzri? As you killed the Mitzri? And that's what they're saying to him. You took us out to kill us. So therefore, the claim that this is Datan Vaviram is based both upon content, both upon the attitude towards Moshe. And as I said, one could also claim this Nitzim and Nitzavim may or may not be connected as well. That's part of it. Later on, when again this is connected to the Datan Vaviram family, when we have Vayitzei Ben Ish Yisraelit Vuhu Ben Ish Mitzri B'toch Yisrael Vayinatsu. Vayinatsu is connected to the Nitzim, and that's why Chazal connect those two portions as well. So let's leave that for the moment, but at least I did want to see the attitude of Datan Vaviram is totally oppositional. They're totally not accepting Moshe Rabbeinu. Again, that voice which we hear all the way back in Egypt before Moshe even agreed to take leadership, we are hearing the echo of it now. Who are you? Who made you in charge? So the difference between the perception of Korach, Datan Aviron, and still this mysterious 250 people, is that Korach, Moshe is talking to, you know, you want to be a Kohen as well, but what did Datan Aviron want? They just don't want Moshe to be leader. I mean, again, that's very, very different. They don't want Moshe as political leader. I'm even willing to break it down like this, that Korach's argument is against Aaron, and Datan Aviron's argument is against Moshe. That's not the same argument. But when you have a coalition, let's go against the leadership. It doesn't mean that once we're against the leadership, everybody's against the same person within the leadership over here. But as I said, when Moshe tells them, oh, you want to be Kohen? Come, let's see you do this. They refuse to do this. Datan, Vaviran, and Korach never acquiesce to go and to perform in this particular way. Let's just take a look. Pasuk Kaf Chet, back in the first source. Oh, you want to know again? Who is it, Moshe or Aaron? The reason why it keeps going back and forth is it depends who we're talking to. Is it Korach or Datan Vaviran? And then, as I said, together there is this dual attack. You want to know that God sent me? Right, and so on. Let's skip a little bit. So who's the Otam and who's the Bateim? The ones who brought the Ketoret, the fire swallowed them up. Datan and Aviron and Korach never brought the Ketoret, which means Moshe throws out that gauntlet. Oh, you want to do this? Go ahead and do it. So again, we're left with this interesting combination, and we're not exactly sure. And the mystery of this is certainly the 250 people. The other mystery is On, who disappears. Again, we've already stated now that Korach, on the one hand, and Datan and Aviron may not be united. They're united in one thing. They refuse. They refuse to take this because they know. They know what's going to happen. But it could be the refusal is different. It could be the refusal on Korach's part is because he has sufficient Yirat Shemayim. And it could be that the refusal on Datan and Aviron's part because they're just not interested in this. This is not where they're coming from. Their attack is from a different place completely. There is some discussion between the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban, and some of it's predictable. And the discussion is regarding when this happened. When this whole story happened. I mean, for us, it's almost... Let's look at the Ibn Ezra first. Ibn Ezra's in source number 6. Yikach Korach, ze ha-davar haya b'midbar Sinai, kishenitchalfu ha-bichorim v'nivdilu ha-leviyim. So he's already now... Kichashvu Yisrael, shemoshe adoneinu samidato l'tek dula le'echav. So right over here, we now already have background. Which means, according to Ibn Ezra, this whole story took place... When the Leviim took the place of the firstborn. When is that? When is that? When did the Leviim take the place of the firstborn? Right after Cheta Egel, and that may be something very significant. So just hold on to that for a second. Who's going to argue with this? The Ramban. Of course the Ramban will argue. Why would the Ramban argue? Because he's the Ramban. By the way, he says it here clearer than he says it in any other place. So let's take a look in source number 7. You like that? As he wishes. As the Ibn Ezra wishes, he flippantly, I'm sorry for saying this, will then just decide any time that he wants. Whenever he feels like it. V'kvar katavti ki al da'ati kol ha-Torah kiseder. I already said that I think the whole Torah is written in Torah. Now he tells us, Zulati b'makom asher yefresh ha-katuv ha-kdama v'ha-achur. Unless the Torah tells you black and white otherwise. So the Ramban here, again, I don't know any place he said it as clearly, the default is everything's written in its proper place, unless the Torah tells you it's not in its proper place, which it does sometimes, especially in Sefer Bamidbar. Aval hayah hadavar hazeh bamidbar paran b'kadosh barnea achar maseh ha-meraglim. Meaning, this story happens after the Meraglim. So we have just like this interesting thing. What starts this off? So according to the Ramban, what starts this off, which I think is what all of us would have said by ourselves. We have the story of the Meraglim. The Jews were just now sentenced to another 39 years in the desert. Everyone's going to die. Read now, quote, unquote, failed leadership. Okay, on the other hand, you can say opportunists now can arise and claim failed leadership. Right? So again, I want to say, it's not so much failed leadership, it was when Moshe was convinced by God that it's okay to delegate, it's failed delegation, it's the people that were the spies that were sent, and so on, but we'll leave that for the moment. Over here, because of the aftermath of the spies, where this punishment came across, is when the opportunists now can jump up and say, okay, what kind of leadership is this? Again, Datan and Aviron, they're the ones who are really cynical. You took us out of a land which flows with milk and honey to kill us in the desert, to kill us in the desert. And that's going to be one of the Ramban's arguments. How can you tell me this happened back then to kill us in the desert? Now the sentence was given. Now that's a reality. That's what they're relating to. This has nothing to do with what happened at an earlier stage. Although, I do want to now take a position which is someplace in the middle. When I say it's someplace in the middle, the Ramban's argument is very, very good. The Ramban's argument, again, he's right. The Ramban is right that the language that they use over here is the language which was introduced right after. That everybody is going to die in the desert. You took us out of a land that flows in milk and honey. You're not taking us to this land, which means how can somebody say that with such confidence if this was before the sentence was given? Which means the Ramban is correct that it's not just that the atmosphere which exists at this point is an atmosphere of depression and we're going to die and we're not going where we have to go. It's not just the atmosphere. It's more than that. The language which is employed is the language which is perfect over here. As I said, the Ramban says that a later line, if you want to look around two-thirds of the round Waidan, where it says the word Meraglim in bold, Lod Palo Moshe, then everybody was depressed and bitter. Again, the whole atmosphere was right. Meaning, that's appropriate for now, where it's bold towards the bottom. I want to stress this point. See, the Ramban just now did something interesting. He's accepting part of the Ibn Ezra's argument, just not the Ibn Ezra's chronology. Ibn Ezra's saying that this happened immediately afterwards. Why? Because Ibn Ezra has something else he needs to do, and that is to identify the 250 men. The Ramban is agreeing about the identification, just not the chronology. The identification is these are the people that once served God, and you think that you were replaced by me, you think you were replaced unfairly, you think you should still be the Kohanim, so you want to try it? And what's the firstborn? And what's their response? Yes, we want to try it. Yes, we believe that we're the ones who should still be the Kohanim, so therefore, what you have over here is this attempt by Korach to put together a coalition of the disgruntled, even though each one is coming from a very different perspective, where Korach's argument is much more personal on Moshe, why do you take everything for yourself? And he would like a little bit more honor. On the other hand, you have Datan and Aviron, who are generally disgruntled individuals who don't seem to want to be Kohen. That's not what it's about. But there is something else that they have, and that's in common over here. And that's also where some of, again, the cynicism comes in. They, Datan and Aviron, own, all have one thing in common, and that is they're from the tribe of Reuven. Reuven was the firstborn who was displaced. Which means initially, before Reuven was displaced, they're the ones who were supposed to be firstborn. Which means the bitterness of Reuven goes back a little bit deeper, but it's still there. Their bitterness, it's not at Moshe, that goes all the way back to Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov on his deathbed already says to Reuven, forget about it. You know, you're not stable. You're not one who can have a position of leadership. So it's interesting. So what does he do? He goes for the various disgruntled. So one is newly disgruntled, one has been disgruntled for a while. But they're all disgruntled because they're all fake firstborn or fake Kohanim, as it were, or the man who could be Kohen. Right, so what you have is Korach in his mind. Well, why couldn't I be a Kohen? If Moshe wanted to be the leader, he could have at least appointed me. Right? Why you? I mean, there's no reason. You're his cousin. Right? Your father wasn't in the firstborn. But still, it's my cousin's a role. I should be as well. And therefore, it's I'm not going to say it's irrational because we understand it, but it's irrational anyway. The fact that again, if everybody's holy, then why you? So, meaning what bothers him over here is not, it bothers him is that he doesn't have a better position. So who does he turn to? He turns to people from the tribe of Reuven. You know, this is terrible that to be a displaced person. He turns to the firstborn. Now, do we all realize that the firstborn and, the firstborn who have been replaced, the 250, and people from the tribe of Reuven, they cannot possibly ever come to their own reconciliation of who should be the ones in charge, unless you find somebody who was firstborn from the tribe of Reuven. But these are two different positions, but as I said, it doesn't bother me so much that it's two different positions, because one is far more interested in the other. Datan and Aviron are not interested, therefore they don't take the pains. The 250 people, tragically, they're not so unconvinced about this. Now, I want to point, now if we, I said I wanted to look at a couple of different verses, we'll see how much time we have, where we get a little bit more insight. One of them is later on by the daughters of Tzilavchad. In source number 10, they say, Avinu made Bamidbar, v'hu lo hayibetocha eda, hano adim al Hashem ba'adat Korach. How did they just now describe that rebellion? A rebellion against God or a rebellion against Moshe or against Aaron, against God? So that's interesting, because here we have the words of an eyewitness coming out and saying, our father wasn't part of that rebellion against God. That is how a bystander perceived it. Okay, that's an important verse, because this gave us insight that we did not necessarily have otherwise. If you take a look at source number 8, Eila Mishpachot Haru Aveni, right, here's the family of, right, Uvnei Palu Eliav, Uvnei Eliav, Nemuel V'datan V'aviran. Look at that. Datan Aviran are not firstborn. That's one thing which is interesting. They are not firstborn. So this whole claim that maybe it's a firstborn from Reuven, okay, that's not Datan V'aviran. Hu Datan V'aviran Kriyei Ha'ida. Wow, that should have surprised you a little bit. You maybe thought the Kriyei Ha'ida was only on the 250. What did we just now learn? Datan V'aviran were people of significance. They were people of political power. They were ones who were called upon. Asher Hitsu Al Moshe v'Al Aaron bat Korach v'otzatam al Hashem. That's a great verse. Where was the attack? Hitzu al Moshe v'Al Aaron ba'adat Korach v'otzatam al Hashem. Right. So I said all this before. So isn't it interesting that we actually have psukim that say it? The only problem with these psukim is that one was over here in the Kavav, and the other one was in Perek Kav Zion. But both, again, towards the end of Bamidbar, coming back and telling us, again, a little more information. But when it came to the perception of the daughters of Tzilavchad, it was a thing against God completely. When it's being told over here, it's being told a little bit differently. By the way, look at Pasuk Yud right afterwards, and still in Source 8. V'tiftach aretz epia v'tivla otam v'et korach b'mot ha'eda. Bochala Esh et Chamishim Matayim, going into this separation between the different punishments. Now there's one other verse that I want to get to, and this I think will give us a little bit more information. This is in Source 13. It's again the famous chapter 106 of Tehillim, which is a wonderful historical retrospective, or the perspective of chapter 106 in Tehillim as a commentary to Sefer Shmot and Bamidbar. So over here, Vayikhanu leMoshe b'machane la'aron kadosh Hashem. What does that mean? Vayikhanu leMoshe b'machane la'aron kadosh Hashem. They were jealous of Moshe in the camp and Aaron, the Holy One of God. Tiftach eretz v'tivla datan v'tichas al adat aviram. So over here, as I said, in Sefer Tehillim, we have an approach. Now, the Gemara in source number 12, the Gemara in Sanhedrin on page 110, it started talking about this whole episode a little bit beforehand. Ittite de Korach Amrle, and here it blames the wife of Korach as the starting point. She's the one who eggs him on. The Gemara over here is going to tell us afterwards that it was the wife of On who then saves him, as we've discussed before. Right, she's actually the one in the third line on page 4. She's the one. The Gemara says, "Chachmot nashim banta beita." It's the woman who is wise. The wise women are the ones who build their families, who build their homes. So, what makes her a wise woman? She sees through the whole thing, which means Owen is caught up in all this, and he says, "You know, comrades, we're all one for all and all for one, and we're rebelling, and this is great." And it says, "Zu ishto she'on ben Pelet." She destroys the home. That of all the things in the world they're going to accuse Moshe of, they accuse that Moshe had slept with married women. You heard me. Why are you saying what? The Gemara just now did. Shenamar, and what verse did it quote? Vayikan'u leMoshe b'machane. They were jealous of Moshe, but that's also the phrase that was used in Parshat Sota to give kinui, to warn, and that's how the Gemara says, Amr b'shmur b'yitzv melamed, shekol echad ve'echad, kineit ishtomi Moshe. All of them were jealous of Moshe, and they said, there's something over here, Moshe's this cult leader who has this unnatural power over women, charismatic. Shenemar, u'moshi kacheta ohel v'natalo michutz tamachene. As the verse says, that Moshe carried his tent. Now, I just want to pause here for a second. Everybody has something to say right now, take a deep breath and hold it. For a moment, we look at the Gemara right before this, which tells a little bit more about On's wife, and that's source 17. Amar Rav, On ben Pelet, Ishto Hitzilato, Amrele, she said to him, Ma nafka lachmine, what are you going to get out of this? So what does she basically say? On, with all due respect, you're an idiot. Imar Rabba and Tamida. The Imar Rabba and Tamida. If Moshe is in charge, you're a follower of Moshe. And if Korach is in charge, you're a follower of Korach. You're not gaining anything over here. Which means all for one and all for all, everybody is holy. She's the one who calls that out. Everyone is holy is only a bumper sticker. Right? They put it on their camels, right? This has nothing to do with reality. Everybody being holy can't work out. Meaning, again, she looks at this and says, okay, Korach, what's his angle in this? Datan and Aviram, what's their angle in it? The 250 people, what are their angle in it? And she says, these people are working with coarse purposes. They don't have the same goal over here. Datan and Aviram, she knows them because they're from the same tribe. She goes, okay, these are people who are losers, and these are people who are rabble rousers, and these are people making trouble, and these are people who just want to take over leadership. What does Korach want? He wants leadership, right? And she knows. You're a follower, Own. You're a follower of them. You're a follower of them. It doesn't make a difference. So he says, "Amar la ma'eva." But what can I do? Havai be'etsa. But I'm part of this. I'm a card-carrying member of this. Vishtabadi le b'hadayu. You know, we swore to one another, right? I'm part of this. Amar le yodana Dekulam kinishta kadishta ninhu. And she uses their bumper stick against him. She goes, I know that the entire community is holy. Dichtiv kikole dekulam kadosha. Amrle tuv, sit down. The undermatzlin alach, I'm going to save you. Ashkite chamra, she gives him some wine, she gets him drunk. Va'arvite, he gets drunk, she puts him down to bed. Va'agnite gavai, utva albaba, they came to the door to go get him. Visatartar lemizaya, and she opened up the clip, she let her hair down. Kol da'ata, whoever came and looked at her, chazi, they saw that there was a married woman's hair was uncovered, harder, and they turned around and ran away. And therefore she said. So she said, they're all holy. So how holy were these people that if they saw a married woman's hair, they ran away? So basically, she saved her husband because these are all holy people. How holy are they? They're so holy that they wouldn't want to see a married woman's hair, but they're willing to argue with Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, again, you have to realize that there's something very special about this type of holiness. But so this Gemara is fascinating, because what is it saying? Between if it's Korach or if it's Datan Aviron, it doesn't make a difference, you're not going to be in charge. But these 250 people, she knows they're sincere. She knows they're sincere, and she uses their holiness against them in order to save a husband. They're not willing to look at anything which is unholy. Therefore, you have an interesting statement about how holy they are. So now, let's go back for a second, because the continuation of the Gemara that we saw said that they all suspected Moshe. I mean, everybody's holy except for one person. Who's not holy? Moshe. Okay, now we've come full circle. Everybody's holy except for Moshe Rabbeinu. Everybody's holy, they won't even look at a woman's hair, but Moshe, we suspect him of sleeping with all the women. So you have to say, do they have mushrooms that grow in the desert? What in the world is going on over here? There's some type of insanity which is taking place. So the verse that the Gemara quoted was interesting. At the end of 12, it quoted a pasuk from Shmot Lamed Gimel. It said, how do we know? Moshe kachata ohel, Moshe took his tent, and he went outside of the machane. Why? Because he couldn't be in the machane according to this, because no one trusted him anymore. So Moshe said, okay, nobody trusts me, I'll move away. Where's this verse from? Conveniently, it's number 14. Umoshi yikach et ha'ol v'natel michutz ha'machaneh harchek min ha'machaneh v'kor lo ohamoed v'yakol mevakesh Hashem yitzel ohamoed Hashem michutz ha'machaneh. When is that? When was that introduced? That was after the Chet Ha'egel, and that probably will now supply us with the missing information about what we needed. You realize already, we got right here already. When did we get here? We got here before with the 250 people. So I want to go back a little bit. The Jews sin with the ego. Actually, according to the Chachamim, everybody sins except for who? The women. Why do the women have this irrational obedience to Moshe Rabbeinu? That's what bothers the men. How is it that I ask you for your gold, you won't give it? And according to this, they have to say the men had to steal the gold and take it. Why were you not willing? Why do you have this devotion to Moshe Rabbeinu? Therefore, simply people doing the right thing are accused, therefore, of the worst possible things. And as I said, that becomes the background. I saw in source 16, the Margoliath, the Reuben Margoliath, he quotes somebody. I have no idea who it is. Somebody will reveal this to me one day. You can make up any Rosh, whatever that means. You want to say it's Imre Hatzadik, Imre Tzadik, Imre Tzvi. You want to say Otzer Midrashe, whatever. I have no idea what it is. V'katuv be'amhatz klape shelo ratzu hanashim lasot ratzon baleim v'litein nizmeim la'egel. They didn't want to give their gold to make the egel. Everyone said, you listen to Moshe more than you listen to your husband. There must be something unnatural about this. Now, of course, as was noted before, Moshe separated from his own wife, and over here, which means Moshe really is the one who has this type of holiness that we don't even understand. And they're all accusing him of the worst possible things. Why? Because Moshe had this ability of getting the women to do the right thing, and that doesn't make any logical sense. So therefore, what we must be dealing with is something which is more the type that we do understand. Now, what else happened at that moment? Okay, the women refused to give their gold. People sinned. So the other thing which happened then is that when Moshe comes down, The Chumash says as follows: Vayamod Moshe b'shar hamachane, vayomer mila shem Eli. This is in Perek Lamed Bet in Shmot. Vayosufu elav kol b'nei Levi. All the Levim come. Vayomer lehem kolmar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Simu ish chabro al yirechov. Yivru v'shavu b'shar l'shar b'machane. V'hirgu ish et achiv. V'ish et reyehu. V'ish et krovo. V'yasu b'nei Levi k'dvar Moshe. V'yipol min ha'am b'yom ha'hu k'shloshet alafei ish. Who worked that day as the Kohanim by the Chet Egel? Who are the ones, if you don't remember, it says that when they made the Egel, it says that they brought offerings that day. Who were the Kohanim that day? It was all of the firstborn. The firstborn were the Kohanim. What does Shevet Levi do to later become Levi and Kohanim? What do? They go and they kill off the perpetrators. Do you realize now what Korach did? Korach, being from the family of Moshe, more likely than not is one of the guys with the swords in his hands, went running through the camp and killing all kinds of people. By the way, if you now want to, I've said this before, but if you want to say it again, Korach is suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome after having been in a battle, after having killed these people. By the way, I never said it like that before. He has killed off these people. He's been involved in all of this. He needs a little rehabilitation. And who are the people that he killed? The firstborn. Who does he form his coalition with? He goes back to the firstborn. He goes back to the people, the ones that actually worked were the ones that were killed. There were other firstborn that now became displaced. And what does Korach do? Korach being, again, just think about the politics involved in this. Somebody from the family of Levi who wipes out, again, the perpetrators, but the prime perpetrators are the firstborn. They're the ones who are bringing the offerings, and therefore they're the ones who get displaced now from being the Kohanim. The Levi takes their place. When did this take place? When they take up their swords and they kill the people involved. So now, what does Korach do? This is interesting. This would make a New York Times Sunday article, right, in the magazine section, about how the former perpetrator reaches out to the former victims, and they try to create a coalition to create a new place of peace and love and understanding and a rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron and God. But that's what Korach did. Let me say, that's what became interesting. On the one hand, he goes for the easy prey. What's the easy prey? The easy prey is that's in Baviran. They're easy. Let's have a rebellion. Great. Let's have a, right? You say you want a revolution, right? So who's all over that? Who are we fighting? They don't even care. Let's go. Like they're all over this. On the other hand, to turn around and to go to people who are sincere—that's the tragedy here. How do I know that they're sincere? Because they actually go dress up as Kohanim, putting on their old clothing. That's part of it. They dress up as Kohanim. They take what they believe should be theirs. And now we have this beautiful reconciliation between somebody from the Levi family, the ones who murdered the others, and Korach comes and says, come, let's be together, let's work together, let's create something, some harmony, peace, and any other PC words that you want to throw into all of this. But the problem the whole time over here and is that he's just completely, completely cynical in this, and he's ready for them to die. Again, what does he want? What's his end game? I mean, I would assume that his end game is that it's all leverage and he wants Moshe to retire. He wants Moshe to stand down. He wants Moshe, who's already been willing to say, that's it, I've had enough, just walk away from this. Moshe, you failed, walk away from this. He wants them to move in and take over as leadership. And again, I'll say it again, I believe that what Korach really wants is political leadership and not the religious leadership. I believe that his problem is with Moshe and not with Aaron. But Aaron over here is a very interesting weak link in all of this, because he was also somehow involved in this sin of the golden calf. So therefore Aaron becomes the weak link, and hoping that Aaron's walk away. But who does he use? He uses these 250 people who believe that they never should have been replaced. And for him, from Levi, who was involved in the slaughter of the firstborn, to come out to reach his firstborn, let's work together and let's make all of this right all over again, you realize the type of cynicism that Korach has. And again, it's quite impressive. I don't know if he was that impressive. My sense of that is what's impressive, is really trying to reconstruct this. But again, according to this, who's the one who sees through all of this? And that's Mrs. Owen, who is the great wife who gets her husband drunk and puts him to bed. Stay out of trouble. Right? Stay out of trouble. Sleep this off. By the time you wake up in the morning, and that beautiful, and that, And that beautiful description, the beautiful description of these holy people who a couple of strands of hair scares them off because they're so holy, but to take on Moshe and Aaron and God, that doesn't scare them at all. That means that they really truly believe in their righteousness, and they really truly believe that God has chosen them and will choose them, and it's only Moshe who's been lying along the way and taking away that choice. So of course they're the fodder in all this. They're the collateral damage. And unfortunately, by the way, that's not where it ends. Another 14,000 people say, "You know, what in the world just now happened?" And then another rebellion begins, and we end up with almost 15,000 people dying in this week's parasha, all because Korach had some issues and really should have just gone for counseling.